there's one phrase that I heard once. It was like, don't go shopping for pain. So are you, you know, keeping those things in your algorithm? Are you going back to these people who are kind of like posting this stuff? Have you taken the steps to unfollow them and protect yourself as much as you can? Or are you leaving that kind of option open for when you scroll?
Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castanini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. So we all know what diet culture is, and it really loves two things: making women feel confused and then selling them the cure. So if you've ever found yourself bouncing between, hey, I need more control, and forget it, I'll just eat whatever, this conversation is for you. In today's episode, I am joined by Colleen Christensen, who is a registered dietitian and founder of No Food Rules, a refreshingly honest conversation about food freedom, fear foods, binging, nutrition confusion, and how to stop treating every meal like a mortal decision is exactly what we're going to do today. We are going to talk about why so many people feel lost without food rules, how to find the middle ground between rigidity and rebellion, and why healing your relationship with food does not mean that you stop caring about your health. So, Colleen is amazing. She's got a lot of energy, and you guys are going to really love this conversation. So I'm going to go get her. All right, well, Colleen, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to chat.
Me too. So, oh my gosh. Okay, I ask this of every guest. So can you tell us a little bit about your story and your background and then how you got into your career? I'd love to hear it.
Yes, absolutely. So I it's funny because I feel like a lot of people who are dietitians, I'm a registered dietitian if you're listening and are unaware, a lot of people who come into this field have like a reason behind it. And they'll be like, oh, I had a food allergy, or, you know, someone in my family had, you know, a medical condition where we had to adjust their diet. I literally was just like, hey, I was never good in school growing up. Never. I was always the social butterfly, the talkative one. Never really applied myself, let's say. And when it came time to choose what do you want to do in college, I just knew I didn't want to do anything. Funny story, we'll loop back to it. But I was like, I don't want to sit at a desk. I don't want to do math all day. And my mom suggested, well, what about, you know, dietetics? I was like, what the heck is that? But I figured, I was like, I like to bake. I like food. Food is going to have to be something I'm going to, you know, have to feed myself for the rest of my life. Why not make it my career? So I kind of just fell kind of into it. And then it was so funny because then I became the biggest nerd. And that's how I knew. I was like, okay, this is exactly what I, you know, am meant to be doing. So went off to college, Michigan State University, go green, for dietetics. And that is when my relationship with food started to struggle. And it's, to be honest, it's a little bit of the chicken or the egg kind of situation, because for me, it was really a source of control. I felt very out of place in college. I, like many people, felt lost, and just everything was new. Everything was so difficult. Being a dietetics major is so, so competitive. And, you know, I found it, you know, my food and my body. I also noticed some changes in my body going, you know, the dorm food, those no-bake cookies got me every time. Loved them and noticed some changes in my body. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. And I developed an eating disorder. It swung from anorexia, then it went to bulimia. And I struggled with that for a while. And then after a few years of that, this was kind of before disordered eating was really talked about. Mm-hmm. And I just remember I went to multiple therapists. I went to dietitians myself. And I just felt like no one truly understood what I was going through. As best as, you know, they could, they helped me. But I just felt like I was finding a puzzle piece here, a puzzle piece there. And it took me so long to have a quote unquote normal relationship with food again. And I really never saw this being my career, being in the online space in particular, but then in the relationship with food, disordered eating type space. And as my relationship with food became much more normalized and it was just, you know, I had gone past that, I kind of started to realize I think I need to be the person that I didn't have to help people find this way faster than I did, because it was a really big struggle. And I think why I struggled so much was I was trying to overcome restrictive eating, and then it swung to binge eating. And hindsight for me was 20/20. I was like, oh my gosh, I understand why that happened. I understand how I could have avoided it and, you know, gotten to this place of peace so much sooner. And so when that kind of started to really be like, okay, you know, let's just throw it out there and see if anyone else resonates with this, and people did. And so I started to kind of have this side hustle of working with clients on the side in my day job. I was a pediatric registered dietitian working in inborn errors of metabolism. So it was that was also a very, very fascinating job. I mean, funny for me, I was saying I didn't want to go into doing all of this math. Well, let me tell you, that is all I did. And it was micromanaging like specific amino acids down to like 0.1 grams of protein for these people. Otherwise, it could be, you know, very, very catastrophic health issues with these inborn errors. And it was fascinating. I love a challenge, but I didn't feel like my passion was in it. And it didn't like light me up the way that I felt like this other kind of side hustle did. And then the online space kind of started to grow. And that's kind of really where I feel like the two kind of puzzle pieces really kind of came together for me. I have always been a very creative person. And so being able to marry this, you know, information that I have that I can help people with an outlet to be creative and think of videos and different, you know, ways to get this information out there, it was then something that just kind of snowballed. And then I had, you know, ended up having to leave my full-time job because this side hustle that I had kind of grew and grew. And that's kind of where we've been ever since.
That's awesome. I love hearing these stories of, like, you know, the paths people take to get to where they're at, right? And that passion, right? I think it shines through. And obviously, like, just hearing your voice, it's like, I can tell you love what you're doing. So, yeah. So curious, like, when you said the side hustle, like, how mm-hmm. did that even get started? Like, how did you start navigating that?
So I would say when I was in college, I remember I had she was a dietitian. I was working in a call center at a hospital, not necessarily like a dietetics job, but I was like, oh, this is a great way to kind of like meet people in the space. So I was working phones, you know, taking orders for the people who were staying in the hospital. And I had this dietitian that, you know, I would ask questions to kind of pick her brain a little bit. And I remember her saying, it must have been about my junior year of college, that or maybe it was my sophomore year. She was like, I think you should start a blog. I think that's going to be big one day. And I was like, okay. And I, you know, did some random things. I wrote articles for the school newspaper and whatnot. And so I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. So I would say since about 2012-ish, I've been dabbling in blogging on and off. And then around, 2016, maybe, I was kind of like, okay, maybe, you know, people are kind of starting to make this a thing. And so for the next couple of years, I kind of, you know, decided to be a little bit more consistent with it, kind of take it a little bit more seriously. And then social media kind of really hit. And I would say right around the pandemic I left my job at the hospital a few years before the pandemic. And in like 2020, it really just started to take off because A, people had more time, they were on social media, but then also because I think that was really a time when people were forced to face their relationships with food because they were using food as a coping mechanism or control or being in their houses so much with the food there. It was just something that was so much more prominent and you couldn't necessarily ignore those things as much. So, I think that was really a turning point for just kind of honestly the online space in general.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Totally changed like my career path for sure. Mm-hmm. But people couldn't come in person, so therapy had right. to switch. Yeah. I'm curious now, so what are some of the topics that you find a lot of people or the struggles people are asking you about online or coming in to ask you for when they're coming in for help?
Yeah, and it's funny because it's changed. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense to me because it also kind of like mirrors my own journey. So we kind of talked about like the pandemic was a big time for people to face their relationship with food. And I think everyone was so like gung-ho on it. And so I almost want to say people were in a phase of rebellion against what they were previously, against a lot of things, right? But I think specifically also in the way they used to, you know, diet culture and stuff in general, or the way they used to view food and movement. And it's almost like people swung, which again, I get it because kind of the same thing happened to me. And I do think to a degree it's normal, but swung from being like so controlled or something to being so like, I'm just going to throw everything out the window. And it's almost like the pendulum swing has gone from one side to the other. And now it's kind of slowly coming back to the middle, or they want it to come back to the middle. So a lot of the questions that I'm answering for people are, how do I, yes, have this no food rules mindset, but also think about my health. And like, I'm sick of eating cookies all day long, or, you know, I feel like it's either of these ends of the pendulum. How do I kind of like meet that middle? I think that people are starting to crave a little bit more of that balance than just kind of turning their back towards any sort of nutrition, like a lot of people kind of went all in with.
That's so interesting. Like when you said like people, I hear this too in my practice. People think if you say no, you know, labels for food or no mm-hmm. rules, that like all of a sudden that means, oh, I'm just going to eat like one type of food, mm-hmm. which is so interesting to me because it's like, where does it say that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Right.
Yes. So I have this, me and my husband talk about this often, is the way that I explain it is kind of having no food rules is there's truly no rules, right? And what a lot of people interpret it as is that kind of you do it the opposite, right? Okay, so I'm never going to choose a sugar-free thing again, or I'm never going to choose cauliflower rice again. Well, here's one thing I would say. If you're always doing the opposite of what diet culture tells you to do, diet culture is still ruling your choices because now you're just doing the opposite. We want the choice to come from you. So having no food rules is really you get to make your own decision. And you can kind of think about your nutrition choices kind of the same way that we view our bedtimes. So stick with me on this. You have permission to stay up as late as you want. You have permission to scroll on your phone. You can pull an all-nighter. You can do whatever. But sometimes we then start to kind of think like, okay, you know, I might be getting a little tired. I have to get up for, you know, work tomorrow morning. I don't want to be groggy. Okay, I'm probably going to go to bed now, right? We want to kind of view our nutrition choices in that same lens. It's not always what sounds the most rewarding or fun in this moment. Yeah, I probably want to keep scrolling or doing whatever than necessarily go to sleep. But we kind of think about that. You can also think about it the same way you take a shower. I don't always want to take a shower, but I'm like, yeah, it's probably going to make me feel better. And, you know, I think it's probably, you know, going to just by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going to probably be feeling like I got hit by a bus. So let's kind of just, you know, go ahead and do that. It's about taking care of yourself in a way that feels good, both mentally and physically. Yes, you're going to have some nights where you just online shop or do whatever, but we kind of are like, okay, that's, again, a choice I am making some days maybe you don't have anything to do the next day. Just the same way you might be like, I'm going to have ice cream for breakfast today. Other days you might be like, okay, I have a big meeting. I need to focus. Maybe I'll have some oatmeal, you know, have a little protein in there, a little fiber. That's probably going to make me feel my best. So sometimes I find explaining it that way, people are like, oh, it's not necessarily cans and can'ts. The choices are, you know, endless. I get to decide what's going to make me feel my best.
That's a great way to explain it. Yes. Because it's true. People are like, oh my gosh, if I have no rules, you know, I've literally gotten calls from people and the grocery store and they're like, help me. I do not know what to buy. I'm literally lost here. I have no clue. And I'm like, well, what do you like to eat? I don't know. Because they've been following.
Oh my gosh. So many people.
Diets,
yeah.
Right. They have been following like some expert guru diet, whatever, for so long. They're literally lost. Mm-hmm. Like, I do not know what I like. I don't know what to buy. I'm scared. I'm freaked out, like lost. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you found that with people or.
Yes, 100%. And what I always say is, I am a big fan of baby steps. I know we live in a society, in a culture where we want like instant gratification. We want to go balls to the walls, right? We want to just do everything all at once. And I did too. And I really do think, I'm not saying this is the case for everyone, but I really do think that is why I swung from anorexia to bulimia and really, really struggled with binge eating. Because I talk about this a lot, is when you are in diet culture, or you have these food rules, your body and your brain are really not in a place that's super regulated for you to be able to make intuitive choices. So I really work with kind of what we call biological reconditioning, where it's really, okay, we have to get your body back to a place of where it's actually fed for you to kind of be able to do those things. So it's making sure you're eating enough. We don't necessarily, you know, challenge all your food rules at once or be like, what do I want to eat? Start with one thing. Maybe you are just first allowing yourself to be like, okay, I'm just going to allow myself to eat a little bit more. Or maybe it's, okay, I'm going to pick one food. Maybe it's bread. And I'm going to, you know, maybe I'll try a new type at the grocery store and see if I like it, right? I know it. People think like, oh, it's going to take forever if I go through it kind of like singularly one by one. But it gets easier the more that you go. But I find that taking those baby steps, it just makes it, A, not only feel better throughout the way, but it actually helps you kind of get there sooner because it starts to get faster the more that you kind of start to tune into things.
And it's, I don't know if you hear this too, but people are like, I can't have mm-hmm. this food, whatever it is, this food they've convinced themselves, if I have it, I'm never going to stop. Or mm-hmm. no, you don't understand. I've tried before. I just binge on it, or I eat it all in one sitting, or, you know, I know myself. I don't allow it in the mm-hmm. house because I know what happens. And I mean, I have my way of dealing with it, but I'm curious like how you manage that.
Or if yeah. You so I think the first thing I'd be like, your thought pattern is rational based on your previous experiences. Like I would never discount someone's thoughts. Mm-hmm. I would say the first thing is that the mind is such a powerful thing. Like if you say you can't do something, that is going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You have to believe in yourself. I know it's hard. And I think that's one of the biggest things with people is that just kind of getting themselves to believe in themselves, because that's why we fall for all of these food rules and diet culture in the first place, is because we feel like we can't trust ourselves. We feel like we can't, you know, do that. And so I think viewing it in a new way of, this is not, you're not approaching the situation in the same way as your past self would. So again, and it doesn't have to be all or nothing. If someone is saying, I can't have chips in the house because I will just eat the whole bag, well, what is something we can try new with this? Maybe we put the chips in a bowl, and maybe we do. We put them back in the pantry and we allow ourselves to kind of sit down. I think I'm a big fan of structure. I will be the first person to say that. And whenever I say that, people are like, whoa, 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 structure, diet culture. Again, it's baby steps. So think about, rather than this is what my previous, you know, self has done. Okay, that makes sense. So then maybe we can try something new to experiment with and see if that helps. Maybe instead of sitting down with just the chips, you pair it with a sandwich or something or some protein and see if that feels better. The more that you can kind of view it through a new light, I think that can really help.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think there's different approaches, and like to your point of like trying to open up someone's eyes to maybe it's not so all or nothing or just mm-hmm. one way, right? The mind is very powerful. If you tell mm-hmm. yourself something, that is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Why do you think there's so much fear around food? Do you think, I mean, just curious.
I think one of the things I think is food and our bodies are tangible, right? It's something we can actively change. It's something we, in terms of like our food intake, our food choices or stuff like that, we can make those decisions versus, and this is just kind of something that I experienced as well, is just like, it felt like I was able to control something and, rather than fixing my emotions, which that it's not as straightforward, right? And I think this is too why food tends to be a struggle when we're very stressed or when we have, you know, are feeling negatively about something, we turn to our body. Body image tends to worsen when we are, you know, going through life changes or something like that, even if we have, it has nothing to do with our body, because we feel like that's something, it's tangible, something called embodiment. We kind of start to think about, okay, I'm going to change my body or fix my body. It makes us feel like we're doing something. I think that can be a huge, huge, huge reason. But then also the marketing and the messaging that we're told all the time that we are not enough. I mean, even down to the stuff that you don't even think is a big deal, whether it's like something at the grocery store says like guilt-free. Well, that, even though you might not think about that like twice, if something doesn't say that, oh, is that like, should I not be picking that one? Is this one better? We just start to rethink all of our choices kind of like through these good and bad lenses.
Right. I mean, the emotional tie to food. Food is not mm-hmm. emotionally laden, but you start doing good, mm-hmm. bad, guilt-laden, this, that, like all of a sudden it's like, oh, I eat the bad food, I'm bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw something at the grocery store and it said like junk lists. And I was like, okay, but like, does that mean the other bars are junk? Because, and that it's those types of things where mm-hmm. you, some people might be like, oh, that's like, I know that the other food isn't bad. I was like, yes, but all of those messages together just pluck away at you subconsciously. And these narratives kind of start to happen. And I think that I don't mean for this to sound depressing, but the only way to ever have diet culture not influence you is to live in a bubble. Because even if you are actively not seeking this stuff out, you're going to be going to the grocery store. You're going to be going to, you know, a restaurant that might have nutrition information. You're going to be on social media and they're going to serve you something you might not want to see. So something that I talk about a lot is kind of building up what I call your diet culture suit of armor. Because you can't avoid that stuff forever. It's just completely unrealistic. And it's being able to see it for what it is, so it impacts you less. It's probably never, I don't know that I've met any single person on the face of the planet who has never had a negative thought about food based on like viewing it through kind of those good and bad lenses. You can get to a place where, yes, oh my gosh, you're like, that is just so not, you know, true. But it's going to be a message that is going to be, it's getting better, but the food industry and, you know, diet culture makes too much money off of marketing it that way for it to go away.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many influences, whether it's like actual influencers, right? They go out there and they're, oh, you can look like me. And they're mm-hmm. out there and they're like, whatever they're wearing or not wearing and saying like, this is what I eat in a day kind of thing. And I know a lot mm-hmm. of my teenage patients are very influenced by that, thinking, oh, I just need to follow this and I'm going to look mm-hmm. like that. And like, not really thinking like every single body is different. Every single human is different. Like just following this isn't going to result in this. Mm-hmm. And also it just baffles me that people think the low amount of fuel they need in a day is adequate. And I'm mm-hmm. like, how do we overcome this? Like, I don't know mm-hmm. how you manage that with the people that come to talk to you, because that's like mind blowing.
It's tough. Yeah. And I think it comes down to, you have to want to protect yourself. Like, no one is going to do this work for you. Like, you, that means unfollowing people on social media or staying off social media as much as you can. Like I said, until you get to that place where you're doing the work yourself and really working on your own relationship with food, so that it can kind of like build up that diet culture suit of armor and kind of allow it to bounce off of you. But there's one phrase that I heard once. It was like, don't go shopping for pain. So are you, you know, keeping those things in your algorithm? Are you going back to these people who are kind of like posting this stuff? Have you taken the steps to unfollow them and protect yourself as much as you can? Or are you leaving that kind of option open for when you scroll?
But I think it's confusing though, because I think people actually don't know what's quote unquote like enough, or what to eat, how to fuel themselves. Mm-hmm. They're getting a lot of information from online and believing that that's actually like what you're supposed to do, or what is enough to fuel yourself. Mm-hmm. And so like, how do people listening even say like, well, how do I know what I'm supposed to put in my body, or what I'm not supposed to put in my body, or if I'm harming my body by putting in things? Like, I'll get questions too, like, well, there has to be healthier food than not healthier food, or food that's gonna hurt me or give me an illness, or, you know, all sorts of other things that go through their minds. I mean, there's a lot of fear too, not just with like weight and things like that, but also like, is this gonna cause like an illness or make me less healthy or whatever? So it's a lot.
Yeah. And I do recommend like nutrition. I think nutrition information is important. I think that especially when you're on this journey, whether you are on the restrictive side of things or overeating side of things, having a basic understanding of what your body needs on a biological level, I do think is very important. Because again, I think that had I understood that and had I known that more, I could have kind of avoided that swing back and forth. So that is something that I do recommend leading with. Like I said, I believe that you have to get your body from a biological, physiological standpoint to a place where it is stable. That means giving your body the types of nutrients that it needs. I do have a resource that I put together. I'm not sure if we can link things if you are interested in the kind of like nutritional breakdown of things as a starting point. And I think that starting there is going to be key before kind of like worrying about all that stuff, because the basics, the carbs, the fat, the protein, and eating enough, not, you know, way over or way under eating, that's going to be the biggest, what do I want to say, like the biggest bang for your buck when it comes to an impact on your health. Once you get that kind of all squared away and okay, we're feeling good on this, we've got the basics, then we can dive into stuff. But I find that so many people are so focused on like this one specific ingredient in this one cookie that they eat once, you know, every so often, but they're completely ignoring the more basic foundational things on a daily basis that are going to have so much more of an impact on your health.
Yeah, no, we don't talk about that enough. Your point, right? It's like, just why don't we have basic nutritional knowledge and information that's just out there and more prevalent? Like, I'm curious why that is.
I think it's not sexy. Like, we want to feel, it feels good when you do something hard, right? It feels good when you have a challenge and you're facing it. It feels good when you have hope. I think that's what there are benefits to following a diet or being restrictive. Like, we don't just randomly decide to do things. There's a benefit for us. Like with diets, it makes you feel, again, like we're doing something. It feels like we are, you know, okay, if this is hard, you know, it must be working. If it's too easy, that's probably not going to do anything. And there's can kind of be honestly the satisfaction with that, although the satisfaction is a facade because it's not actually going to kind of work on what we're actually wanting to happen, being our healthiest, happiest self. But I think that we're so caught up in kind of the flashy things and the different diets and the trends that it's just not as fun to kind of focus on that stuff. And that's something that I hear often is people are like, well, food's just not really as fun anymore. Or like, you know, it's just not as exciting. And yes, you kind of do have to experiment with things a little bit more. But isn't it an amazing thing when food is not the center of your life and you can focus on having excitement in other ways, having hobbies, having creativity, being able to go and do things? It's almost like relearning other ways to find joy and fulfillment and just kind of that an outlet almost.
Yeah, it's amazing how much mind space opens up when all of that is empty. It's like, oh my gosh, like it's not so consuming.
And I do think too, also when you think about like mind space, as grow, like from my own experience as well, like we don't want to face a lot of the things that are going on in our minds, right? Whether it's like our emotions or anything. So, I mean, if we are like, okay, I want something else to focus on, this, you know, hard thing that I'm doing can kind of, it can kind of sometimes also act as a distraction.
Well, that's the crux of, I mean, that's what I work with, right? In therapy is like, what is the purpose of being so focused on the mental math of calorie counting or exercise or focusing on the, you know, the eating disorder thoughts and all of that. It's like, it's to your point, serving a purpose, right? It's helping you distract or not worry about or think about or become aware of all the things that the mind is occupied with all the other things, right? Yeah. Serves a great purpose and you feel in control. I'm doing something, right?
Yes. It's just, it's one of those, it's almost like a Chinese finger trap. Like the harder that you kind of like pull at it, the tighter grasp that it kind of starts to have on you.
Right. It's very complicated. And, you know, I also find too that like, it gets very confusing when, you know, maybe food starts to become a little bit more, or I guess less of like labeled, but then it's like, if someone's coming out of say, like all the rules and then they eat something what they remember of like in their restrictive phase, like a salad say or something, and they're like, wait, am I back in my eating disorder now? Because I regularly like salad, but I remember having a lot of these when I was restricting or dieting. Now what does this mean? Am I relapsing? What's happening? And so like, I don't know, I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that's I think that is where a lot of people are at. And it's almost like this fork in the road where you almost like you don't understand how to kind of like navigate those things. And I would say that is honestly my passion, is getting people back to a place. Yes, I want you to be able to eat the cookie without guilt and to be able to make the bunny butt Easter cake like I made this past weekend and enjoy that and, you know, not think about the frosting or, you know, any of that stuff and just realize like this is just, this is living life, right? But then also being able to think about nutrition again and getting back to that place where it's not just one foot in one place or like you're in the other. It's being able to really, I feel like, create a new identity with food of it's not what I used to do. It's not, you know, it's what I'm doing now. What's feeling good to me now and what's feeling, you know, it's almost kind of, like I said, kind of like viewing it as different identities with food sometimes I think can help people a little bit without kind of like carrying some of their old thoughts into it.
Yeah, it's a definite transition. And, you know, I know we're kind of getting into time, but I'd love to hear your thoughts too on like, why are, I mean, if I think back to like when I was young and like just watching the trends with dieting, like, why do you think there are so many and they're all contradictory? And I think this is part of the confusion, right? Like I grew up back in the day when like carbs were king and like that was what you ate, right? Like, and now it's like, everybody's so afraid of carbs and I don't even know how that happened, but whatever. Why do you think there's so many? And like, you could just Google and just your mind could be blown. Like in one diet, like this food is like, eat it and like this is like amazing, and the next one it's like, don't eat that one because that one's toxic.
I would say, I think, because you can make an argument for anything, I always say this, when someone reads a study or a headline, there's probably information that is missing. I could tell you right now that you should probably never eat a carrot again because you could get vitamin A toxicity. Is it possible for someone to get vitamin A toxicity? Yes. Is that likely going to happen? No. So I think a lot of things are taken out of context, but then they take that context that doesn't really apply and try to make it fit to fit this narrative. So I think that people, a lot of times you are able to interpret things to kind of like prove your argument. And if someone proves, also a lot of stuff on the internet is all about clicks. If they can do something that is different, that is unique, they're going to do that. So a lot of times they do kind of view the data that they want through rose-colored glasses to kind of like make it fit. And they can say it with the utmost confidence and make you be like, oh my gosh, maybe they got a point. But when you actually dig into the stuff, it's like, oh, but that's the thing. Unless you have a degree in this stuff, it's very easy for it to kind of slip by you and to sound very factual. So the internet, it's a wild, wild west. It can be great. And it can also be just such a cesspool of information as well.
I'm wondering, like, when you go on, do you just like, your eyes sometimes pop out? You're just like, what is that?
I honestly don't really scroll much nutrition. And that's also something that I would say too. Like, are you also following funny dog accounts? Are you also following stuff that has nothing to do with food, home renovations and that kind of thing too? But yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, I never watch like those Netflix documentaries. I just am like, this is like, again, sometimes I have to do it for work to be able to do it, but I don't go searching for pain and kind of all of this other stuff. And again, like I said, I also have to understand what's going on in the, you know, culture as a whole. But yeah, I honestly try not to.
Yeah, it's funny. I try not to either, but sometimes people will tell me things. I'm like, I kind of need to know.
Yeah.
Also what's out there. But it's true. Whatever algorithm you have, it kind of becomes your worldview. And you think that's what the world is about, right?
Let me tell you right now, I think the world revolves around beagles because that's all the content that I get. My world does revolve around a beagle. I should say that. But I think everyone else's does too.
That's amazing. What's your beagle's name?
Theodore.
Oh.
Yes.
Switch up the algorithm.
Yes. See what happens.
Is there anything that, like, you know, before we end, where you could maybe impart some wisdom to people that are really struggling right now with anything that's confusing?
Yeah, I just think that I have faith in you, and I hope that you have faith in yourself too. I know it's hard. I know it can feel like, I remember laying on the bathroom floor, just like crying and being like, I don't want to keep living like this. Mm-hmm. And you can do it. It's going to take work. It's going to take determination. It's going to probably take doing things outside of your comfort zone. But my goodness, life is just so much more fulfilling when it's not filled with food and body shame and all of this stuff. And just know that there's, oh my gosh, I know we have talked about kind of how the internet can be a wild place, but like, I didn't have a lot of the social media stuff when I was going through this. Like, there's so many, if you're listening to this right now, you are listening to two people right now who care about you, who are wanting to help guide you, and you're not alone in any of this. So don't be afraid to reach out to anyone, whether it's a DM or anything like that. I think sometimes the most impactful things is not even necessarily the guidance. It's not even necessarily the tips or, you know, how to navigate cookies. It's just someone saying, I believe in you. You can do this. Yeah, I think that would be my last little words. You got this. Yeah. And you're worth it too. I know sometimes it's difficult to kind of put ourselves first or want to do that, but by putting yourself first and working on that, you're also going to do wonders for everyone else in your life too.
Yeah. And okay. Sorry. One more question.
You're fine.
If someone is saying, yes, I want guidance. I want to reach out and actually make the next step and get help. I have found there are dietitians and nutritionists who aren't well-versed in eating disorders and aren't like yourself. How can someone know they're working with the right person? Because obviously, like, you are very well-versed in this. You have the experience. You're not going to say things that are going to put somebody on the path of dieting and things. So how can someone know they're working with someone like yourself?
I think that almost view it, if you're wanting to like work with or make a connection with someone who like really gets you, almost kind of view it like dating. This is actually what I did with my own therapist too, is just kind of do a little sleuthing on the internet of the person, you know, maybe a Google them or something. And, you know, you look at their Instagram page or whatever it is, and just kind of understanding, do I jive with this person? Is this someone who I feel like gets me? And if it's someone that you are wanting to like work with, you know, one-on-one, like when I was looking for a therapist, I called them and I said, hey, would you be willing to talk to me on the phone for just a couple of minutes? This could also be sliding into someone's DMs and just asking a question, but just being able to kind of like have that conversation and going with your gut. I know that sounds kind of wild to say, but there's a lot of times when people will send me a DM and they'll say, you know, I'm working with this dietitian. She's having me, you know, do XYZ. I really don't like want to do that. You should have someone that you feel comfortable with saying anything to. And I always tell it to people. I'm like, you will never shock me with anything that you say. So please be completely open and honest. Like, I will never judge you. And this is a two-way street, right? I want to make sure that we jive together. So I think that doing that, I think, is just one of the best things that you can do. It's just sometimes when your gut is like, this doesn't feel right to me, speak up and let them know, or use that as a sign to be like, yeah, this isn't the right person for me. And not everyone is going to be the right person for everyone. Doesn't mean they're a bad person. Doesn't mean they're even necessarily wrong. They just might not be for you, and that's okay.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Cause I think it is hard to tell. It is very hard to tell sometimes. Like somebody, lots of people will say like, I'm, you know, helping people with their eating struggles or this or that. And then you look at some of the messaging and it's very diet culture. I think
credentials are also really good too. So if you're looking for like an actual registered dietitian, look for those, you know, words in there versus like nutritionist is not necessarily a regulated term. Anyone can kind of call themselves a nutritionist. So RD is if you're looking for a dietitian, what you're going to want to look for.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. I know you've got great content on social media. How can people find you? And
Yes. Thank you for having me. I feel like I could just talk to you for days. You can find me on Instagram or TikTok at no.food.rules. I also have a YouTube channel, Colleen Christensen, post a lot of vlogs on there, a little bit more kind of like behind the scenes of life. If you want to see like, how does this look kind of like on a daily basis? Love hanging out there. And you can find, I will share it's called the 1-3-5 system guide. If you're like, I want a little more structure on how to eat with no food rules, it's linked in my bio on my website and everything in there. But yeah, you can find me all over.
Awesome. Well, oh my gosh, this has been great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please like, rate, and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional,
You should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situations.